I will call the meeting to order, and the first bill author that walks in the door is Representative Purcell here. No. Representative Quayle. No. Representative... Oh, she is. Good. Representative Quayle, you're on. Okay, then we, how about, would you run away for him or not?
Kind of, sort of.
Representative Bly. The first four bills today are going to be like 10 to 12 minutes because we have our working group BSAG bill, and we need to spend the bulk of the time on that because we've had members working very hard on that all session, and it's a working group for this committee. Do we have a quorum? No, then we can't move your bill, Representative Bly, but it is House File 214. The third one down in your packet, and Representative Bly, if you could explain it, and we will move it when we get a quorum.
This bill makes it possible for a school district to partner with other school districts and other entities to form a LLC or some kind of partnership to own and operate a wind turbine. There is an amendment, and I realize you won't be able to act on it, but...
And to delete everything, so why don't we just work off of that as if we had adopted it, and then we will adopt it the minute we get a quorum.
I actually don't have a copy of the...
Did the pages get Representative Bly? Where are the pages, even? Lord.
And this puts the bill in the form that it has gone forward in the Senate, and actually includes some comfort language for the utilities so that this group or partnership doesn't become a utility. And that was their primary goal. And I see there is somebody here who could speak to it if you have questions about that amendment. But that's essentially what the new amendment does. The other language is pretty straightforward and simple, and I'd be happy to take.
Very good. Questions from members? Anybody that wishes to testify for or against the bill? I wish we could lay it over. I wish we had amended. You know what, Representative Bly? We'll move it, amend it, and lay it over after you've gone.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Is Mr. Lundell here yet? All right, then. Representative Kilstrom, I just told her she could go away because we weren't going to get to her bill. Mr. Lester, if you could find her, we could do your bill next. Mr. Representative Purcell, we've been waiting for you.
Do we have a question?
Representative Purcell, we don't have a quorum, so we cannot move your bill, but we want to hear about it. We'll move it for possible consideration as soon as we get a quorum, which may be after you leave. You're the second bill for the day, and our members seem to be lost in the hallway.
I see. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And apparently so were you.
Yes, it was delayed. I apologize.
Okay, while you're getting settled, there is a printout that will have our staff, Mr. Strom, explain. Mr. Strom.
I have a testifier, actually a couple, if I may bring them up, Madam Chair.
Okay, why don't they get settled, too, while Mr. Strom is going through the printout for the members?
Madam Chair, members, there's a printout in your packet labeled Fiscal Year 10 Pupil Transportation Proposal. What this printout does is shows what a miles reimbursed formula would look like at 50 cents per mile per pupil transported in the regular excess categories of transportation. The printout is in district number order, and at the top are summaries by clusters, by metro, non-metro, and you can see if you read from left to right on the printout, the first column there is the number of pupils in each of the districts. The second column gives you a measurement of size of each of the districts in square mile areas. That third column then shows the number of pupils transported in both those two categories, the regular category and the excess category. Those are both to and from school categories. The fourth category shows the total number of miles transported for each district. You can see statewide that's about 73 million miles. And then the last two columns show the effect of this bill, which would be to put a 50 cents per pupil mile transported formula in place. So that's a quick summary of the printout, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Crow. And apparently we now do have a quorum. Representative Benson was the first one here, and in fact, he and Representative Garofalo were the only ones here when we called the meeting to order. Representative Benson, did you read the minutes?
I have read them very carefully, Madam Chair, and I would like to move them.
Representative Benson moves the minutes of April 1st. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Now we'll go back and move Representative Bly's bill. Members, we're on the second bill. Some of you were not here. We could not move the bill nor amend it, but we now will. So I will move House File 214 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill for Representative Bly, and then I will move his delete-all amendment, the A090290 amendment. It's his delete-all on his wind energy conversion. Any discussion on that amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill, he explained. And if anyone has any questions, they could ask Representative Garofalo or Representative Benson, who were here. Any other questions? None. Okay, I renew my motion that House File 214, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Oops, I'm sorry, we're just laying it over. Even I get confused on days like this. Representative Purcell, do you have anyone to move your bill, or should I move it for you?
I would be honored if you move the bill for me.
I will move House File 2008 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Purcell does not have any amendments. We have had the explanation of the data sheet from Mr. Strom, and then Representative Purcell, it's your turn now to explain your bill and introduce us to your testifiers. Now we can take a breath. And welcome, by the way, to Dr. Hess, who we enjoy seeing when we get to Bemidji.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I do have Dr. James Hess, Superintendent of School District 31, Bemidji, and Mr. Chris Linen of the Finance Department with me today, and just brief overview. I know many of you have experienced this conversation before, and I imagine it will continue until it gets remedied in one way, shape, or form. The issue is transportation funding equity, and for our effort here, the effort of House File 2008 is to bring the transportation funding into a manner that pupil miles transported would be the consideration added to funding for each school district, and we've laid that out in the bill here. And I would just offer, if I may, for Dr. Hess and Mr. Linen to address the issues specific to School District 31. I know there are other districts that are impacted by this, so I'd turn it over to them for now and try to answer questions here as they come up.
Thank you, Rep. Purcell. Dr. Hess, welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representatives, we're here today to talk about a problem that has been a part of the transportation formula since the transportation formula was rolled into the general state aid formula, and that is, it creates a system of winners and losers, and I think our illustration shows you how that can happen, where it shows what should occur in Bemidji School District and compares us to Elk River, Richfield, and Grand Rapids. And what happens is a system that should be fair and should treat students and districts equitably across the state ends up creating winners and losers because of the formula pays in some cases for students who do not ride the bus, and it also pays in some cases for miles that you don't have to drive. And so the sparsity formula really isn't working in its present shape and form. We believe that it's important that the transportation sparsity formula start addressing actual costs and start addressing actual student ridership. Those are important to us, and we hope that they would be important to you as well as you review this proposed legislation. We have tried to lay out the issue. It's been included in last year's House and Senate omnibus bill. The governor even had addressed it in his, and then in the 11th hour when the final compromises were struck, somehow the transportation sparsity remedy was omitted. So we bring it back to you and ask for your attention and your consideration of this.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hess. Mr. Linen, if you could identify yourself as well for the tape and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Representative. My name is Chris Linen. I'm the Director of Business Services at Bemidji School District. And one of the main concerns we have with the transportation situation is that we are growing a cross-subsidy in our school district where we are being forced to take dollars out of the classroom to cover a mandated service. Last year, that amount grew to $690,000. And while we don't begrudge other school districts, we would hope that a hold harmless could be somewhere in place where if some school districts receive more funding than they need, well, that's okay, but certainly other school districts shouldn't have to be taking dollars from the classroom to provide this service. Now, the bill that's in front of you would add 50 cents per mile driven, and in my opinion, any legislation that gets closer to the actual cost is a step in the right direction. And two of the measurements of actual cost for transportation are miles driven and students transported. And the current system, those two factors are an adjacent second at best, because it's currently paid based on students who attend your school, not necessarily riding the bus. And so percentage of ridership is a significant issue for us. In addition, the fact that you may have to drive more miles with a single student than another school district might have to drive with a dozen students is an issue, because miles driven is a large factor in determining your overall cost. So if the legislature wants to get what it's paying for and pay for what it's mandating, then you need to tie the reimbursement formula closer to the actual service that you're attempting to achieve. Thank you
very much. Questions from members for Representative Purcell or for the testifiers? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe this is for the staff or the staff. How would this break down per student on our formula like this? How would this work within our formula?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, it adds a new category to the transportation sparsity formula, and it funds that at 50 cents per mile per pupil transported in the to and from school categories, the regular and the excess categories. So for each school district, the number of miles that their students were transported throughout the year, they would receive 50 cents per mile for each of those miles that their buses went per student.
Okay. And just a follow-up, Madam Chair. So on a say Bemidji, then, how much more money would this represent for like a school of Bemidji?
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, Bemidji is school district number 31, which is on the first page of your printout there. And you can see in the third to last column is their miles transported, 868,000 miles transported. And if they were reimbursed at 50 cents per mile, per pupil mile transported, that'd be a total of $434,000 for the district.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Hess, could you tell us, in the districts that I represent, as we have all suffered through some financial hardships, we've had to put some restrictions on traveling, on who can travel on a bus and who can't. number of miles away from school, the schools you go to, school of choice, those kind of things. Do you have any restrictions within your district as far as, and I'm guessing, you know, as I look at Grand Rapids, who made $367,000, or Ridgefield, who made $539,000, you know, are we, each district is different in what their criteria is. Can you tell us some of the criteria for your transportation policies up there?
Madam Chair.
Dr. Hess.
Thank you very much. In the Bemidji School District, we're a large geographic area, and we're not unlike many other of our neighboring districts. We have a high concentration of students who qualify for free or reduced lunches, and in our particular case, 48.5% of our children qualify for federally subsidized lunches. There isn't a lot of extra spending money around the home, and so many of our students depend, and our families depend on our school district transportation in order to get to and from school. So our percentage of ridership is very high. In fact, it's about 97% of our students will ride a bus. And we've put some restrictions on, especially in the city of Bemidji itself. We have walk zones where students have to be so far away from the building before we would actually transport them. We also have transportation for students that would have to cross the railroad tracks or high volume traffic highways and things like that. Our district is also very rural. We have schools that are out in big timberland, and so of course there's no walk zone through the tall trees. All of those students would qualify for transportation under our present guidelines.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Under this proposed legislation, would this take the place of the existing sparsity formula, or is this all new funding for transportation?
Representative Purcell.
Representative and Madam Chair, this would add 50 cents per mile and about $36 million to what is an open and standing appropriation.
And Representative Anderson, Representative Purcell knows, and the testifiers know, that we don't have any funding this year. We are not going to be spending $36 million more dollars on transportation, but as some continuing members know, the CS Minnesota did recommend that transportation be rolled out into a separate categorical, and the new Minnesota Miracle did not take that recommendation, but created two new transportation categories, so there's kind of 25% new funding that is rolled out in a categorical, and so it's kind of a amalgamation of that recommendation. And as we know, we're not going to be starting the new Minnesota Miracle this session. We hope to put it into law and have it be in the forecast so we don't get done in as soon as we have money to implement it. And so suggestions like this that come forward can be used for perfecting that as we go forward. The main reason that the bill has detractors is the price tag. So everything we add to it just makes that price tag bigger. Reps and deputies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. Sparsity aid right now is strictly transportation. Is that correct? I mean, that's what sparsity aid is for? And I understand that you feel that it's not enough, but I don't have direct experience with sparsity aid. I represent the Lake Minnetonka district. So we have never been beneficiaries of sparsity aid, and that's what I wanted to ask you on your chart too. So if is the $36 million, why do we need a different category for the $50 per pupil? That's my question. If sparsity aid is still there, why do we need a new category?
Dr. Hess.
Madam Chair, we need the transportation sparsity formula to help make up some of the differences that are in the current formula. Currently, every district in the state receives transportation sparsity. even your district, even Richfield, which is 16 square miles, they're receiving transportation subsidy rather than a district like Bemidji that's about two-thirds the size of the state of Rhode Island. Okay, so we're all getting transportation subsidy. However, the formula is flawed, and that's why we are here today, to address some of the flaws in the formula. And hopefully, as you're thinking about new legislation or potential changes to reimbursement for transportation, we can get closer to those actual costs or those things that districts have to look at when they make decisions about how to spend general fund budgets. Because right now, we have to write a check to transportation to pay for these bills, because transportation is a mandated service. And as a result of this, we have to take away from what we're doing in the classroom. And I think that's a harmful situation.
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I ask another question?
Representative, very quickly, because we're a very tight schedule today, as usual.
Okay. If we could look on your chart under Minnetonka, which is one of my schools, I just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. That's District 276. I notice you've got your proposed mileage revenue of, is that 16,000 or 16 million? And then the proposed mileage revenue per pupil is 2.
What then, Deputy?
That's on page 2.
It doesn't say that it's my, I think that is 16 million.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Ms. Crowe and I have been looking at this. We're not quite sure. A few of the district's miles transported don't seem quite right to us on the total miles transported for Minnetonka showing up as low as they are. So we need to double check on the data source on that. But the goal of the bill essentially is that 50 cents per mile transported. So if the district's running 100,000 miles per year, that's what they'd be reimbursed on,
based on
the miles transported.
All right, thank you very much.
And they've assured me also, the staff represent deputy, that Roseville is really more than a 1 proposed mileage revenue, and you are, at least Minnetonka is a 2. But, one of the things that we do look for in this bill, and, this is obviously not the year for this, but I think the fact that the sparsity doesn't work, you've mentioned, there is transportation sparsity in addition to sparsity revenue, and now we have this idea. I would say that Representative Anderson, Ward, and Purcell perhaps could work with the fiscal staff to try to combine all three and just have one thing. We're trying to simplify, and anything that's just an add-on is not simplifying, and then if something is flawed, but you add on to it, but you don't fix what's flawed, that doesn't give it as good of a chance. We like to simplify, make things fair. And when we had the new Minnesota Miracle discussion, the idea of having sparsity and transportation sparsity was fairly unique to Minnesota. Most states have one or the other. And so to add this on, too, I think gives it a harder row. So I would suggest you're working together and coming up with just one thing. And then to make it fair but more simple, I think it would have a better shot for when we do have funding. Representative Dietrich, you get the last question.
Thank you. And this isn't a question, Madam Chair. This is a comment, is that I am very pleased to see the transportation proposals come forward, and I'm very pleased to have a transportation piece in the Minnesota Miracle, because what I think this kind of addresses what Representative Depke was starting to talk about. We have a cross-subsidy in transportation. We have $170 per pupil dedicated in the per pupil formula to transportation, and that just probably does not cover the cost, the actual cost, in very many school districts. So we are forced to take that money from the general fund, which should be going into the classroom for reading, math, the other very important subjects, as opposed to across subsidizing our transportation budget. And to highlight that and to call it a categorical and provide transparency and simplicity as it does in the Minnesota Miracle. Thank you.
Thank you. And there, Representative Purcell, goes your metro partner for your team to study this. Representative Purcell, one final word.
I thank you all. And to your point, and I take it, Madam Chair, in regard to trying to come up with something that would be equitable across the whole board. Even if we did this bill and we were successful, School District 31 would still be about $300,000 behind as far as transportation equity goes. So this wouldn't get us all the way there, and I recognize that, and welcome the opportunity to advance that. So
I appreciate this and all the comments.
And we look forward to your next proposal, and I know you're a strong education backer, and we'll work on it with people mentioned here. Thank you very much to the testifiers as well.
Thank you. Thanks, Committee.
Representative, pardon me? Oh, yes. Renew my motion for House File 2008, laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members.
Representative Swales, I think we'll take Representative Hillstrom next because I had we scouted her out since no one was here. Now she's here, and since she's not on the committee, we don't want to have her sit. Yeah, unfortunately, because she was last year. We don't want her, as long as Representative Swales has to sit here anyway, but Representative Hillstrom does not. Representative Hillstrom, do you want me to move your bill, or did you ask a member to do so?
If you would move it, Madam Chair, that would be great.
I will move House File 2425 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As most of you know, Brooklyn Center School District tends to be one of the examples in the papers when they talk about the integration revenue and whether or not it is working or not. And so Brooklyn Center, you've also heard our case in the past that we are in desperate need of resources. So this is door number three, I think. So what this says is that Brooklyn Center should be, it would be Brooklyn Center, Columbia Heights, Richfield, that would be moved into the category the same as Minneapolis and St. Paul, Manchester.
All right. And before we have your testifiers, I see you have a lot. So and each hearing, just so everyone knows, is like 10 to 12 minutes today. So I don't know if you want the staff to go over the printout or if you'd rather hear from your testifiers right away and then see if there's time for that.
Madam Chair, and most of them are here for questions.
Okay.
So,
why don't we do the testifiers first and then we'll see how the time goes. Dr. Lester or someone else?
Yes,
Dr. Lester. Okay.
Thank you, for Madam Chair, for calling me Dr. Lester. My name is Keith Lester. I'm Superintendent of Schools in Brooklyn Center, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak. I'm going to keep my remarks brief because I've spoken to at least some other committees, and you've heard the story of the demographics of Brooklyn Center and how we look in the Office of the Legislative Auditor report, so I won't spend a lot of time telling you that. Joining me today is Brian Bass, who's our high school principal, who actually will speak for us. We have Zena Schuster, who's the ELL coordinator from Columbia Heights, is with us. Superintendent Kelly is in a matter that she can't leave the district for, and she wishes she could be here. And Dr. Slaughterback, the superintendent from Richfield, is with us. And I'm sorry that
Stephen West is our middle school principal.
And Stephen West, their middle school principal. So I wanted you to meet them. I want to just say, in case I don't get a chance later, that I do support the purpose of the revenue, as was originally at least described in Representative Newton and Brown's bill for integration, and that closing the achievement gap, I think goes hand in hand with moving students about. And I'll leave out all the other information. I just want to say that 4 years ago the Legislative Auditor Report came out, and that the message I want to leave is that it's been 4 years, and the issue hasn't just been about dollars and cents for us, although it's probably $2.5 million that Brooklyn Center didn't receive, and it hasn't been just dollars and cents for Brooklyn Center or Columbia Heights or Richfield either. It's been about reduced opportunity for children, and they deserve that opportunity. I urge you to put a face on the children today and make decisions that will help them today, not a year from now or whatever that may be. So that's all I have to say. I appreciate your time, and I would turn it over to Brian.
Ms. Bass, if you could state your name and title and give us your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Brian Bass. As Mr. Lester said, I'm principal at Brooklyn Center High School in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota.
Very good. And if you could give us your testimony.
Yes. I am here today, this afternoon, to speak to the school community I serve, the students, staff, and families of Brooklyn Center. As has been brought up most recently, the integration revenue formula has intended and unintended consequences, creating winners and losers. And what does that mean in this context? It means that there are two school districts that look like three other school districts, and they receive over $400 per pupil and we receive these other three districts that are losing $129 per pupil for having the same or the consistent protected student demographic base as these other two districts. So we are not being treated equally as it relates to this funding formula. And we share the same protected student demographic base. So the request is quite simple. We want to be treated the same. We want to be treated the same as Minneapolis and St. Paul because we share the same burden in educating that protected student population. And I certainly would stand up here today or sit here and present to you today that, that if given the opportunity to have that kind of funding support, I guarantee you that the acceleration of closing the achievement gap at Brooklyn Center secondary school setting will rapidly take place. I guarantee you that. So,
thank you very much. And this is just one proposal that does lead into the work of Representative Newton and Brown. We have one bill in between, and then we will get to that bill as well. Questions from members?
Yes.
Representative McFarlane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a fiscal amendment?
Representative McFarlane, maybe this would be a good time to have Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow go through the printout, which has that information as far as the total state cost.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Lester.
Yes. Dr. Slaughterback was going to speak, too. Do you want him to wait until after the...
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought the others were there for questions.
Well,
why don't we have Mr.
The rest of them.
The rest of them. Why don't we have Mr. Slaughterback, and then Representative McFarlane will help me remember her question, and we'll ask the fiscal staff. Sorry, if you could state your name and give us your testimony.
Robert Slaughterback. I'm the new superintendent from Richfield. I'm completing my 8th month, so I'm new at the job, and I've brought along one of our experts in the field, and he certainly will be able to answer questions probably better than I. But I did bring a handout. I'll just pass it around. It should give you, it should give you a sense of the change in Richfield. I think you'll see from these two bar graphs that over the course of the last 6 years, Richfield School District has changed significantly. And as our colleague stated, we are with a clientele, a group of students now that have more needs than they used to have in our particular school district. I think you'll see that dramatically demonstrated in that graph. My experience as a superintendent, this is my 15th year as a superintendent, is that school districts that are in rapid change are somewhat the districts that have the most need because there is so much change going on. We're seeing a change in the resident population. We're seeing a change in our open enrollment population. And you can see we're also seeing a significant change in the socioeconomic range of our students. So we're here to certainly speak in favor of the bill. I won't state any more information. I guess we're here for more for questions of the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slaughterback. Okay, back to Representative McFarland's question. If people could look at the printout, and we'll have someone explain it. Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, members, just very quickly, you have a printout in your packet that says Integration Revenue Fiscal Year 2010 at the top. There's several columns on this. The first is the pupil counts, and is the current amount of integration revenue each district gets, and the amount to the right of that is the amount per pupil, and you can look up and down that list. And then there's several demographic variables for each of the district lists based on last fall, the fall 2008 counts. For districts that are rapidly changing in populations, these numbers may well be out of date by now. You can see the populations for the protected students, the free and reduced lunch counts, the percent LET and the percent mobility is measured with a mid-year mobility. But as I said, Madam Chair, one of the concerns always with fast-changing data is we won't know the counts for fiscal year 10 until next fall's counter process.
Representative McFarland, does that answer your question? Very good. I don't see any other members. Is there anyone that wants to testify for or against the bill? Representative Defty, did you have a question?
I do, just a real quick question. Why are we just looking at it for two school districts? In other words, if we're trying to get a sense of equality, why wouldn't we take a look at other school districts and do a statewide equality on integration revenue?
Representative Defty.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Defty.
You always
All right, thank you. Brooklyn Center
and these other school districts more closely reflect Minneapolis and St. Paul. And we don't fault Minneapolis and St. Paul that they get extra money because we believe they need it. And what we're saying is we need it too. And so we are not in a position to say that we should take money away from one district to give it to us. We're just saying that we were highlighted in the legislative auditor's report as a school district that had an issue and that the formula wasn't quite fair. And so we came up with some ideas that weren't just about Brooklyn Center, but that actually brought some of the other districts in line as well.
And Representative Depke, like you said, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg bill, and then we have Representative Newton and Brown's proposal that is what you're, I think, suggesting. So any other questions? Representative McFarland.
Madam Chair, I'm a little confused because I see Richfield is here testifying that they don't get anything out of this.
Representative McFarland, I just answered the same questions to Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, and they said yes, but they are poised to. If you look at the demographics, they're almost there.
I think Mr. Spotterback. The data is a little bit behind of the curve, and I think that when you actually look at our current situation, that we do qualify.
So there actually are already there, if we have the current data. All right, if there's no further questions, then I thank you very much. Representative Hilstrom, any final statement?
Thank you, Madam Dader. We need some money. We need some help. So anything you can do.
Thank you so much. And House File 425 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Swales, I see Mr. Lundell has finally arrived. Probably over in the Senate. We know that our governmental relations people are running from pillar to post this time of year. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 1856, and we also have two oral amendments.
Representative Swales moves House File 1856 for possible inclusion, and your first oral amendment.
Madam Chair, on page 8, line 25, after the word categories, insert this phrase, and for special transportation separate from regular and excess transportation. And we have a copy of that oral amendment to give to council if you would like.
Okay, let me just get it down so I can repeat it, and then giving them the copy would ensure that we get it right.
All right.
Members, on page 8, line 18.25, after categories, insert, and for special transportation, separate from regular and excess transportation. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Wells incorporates that oral amendment, and then your next one.
All right. There's no other one. I was advised there was when I first arrived.
Very good. And I've been advised, because this is an amendment, you're actually just amending your bill. We do need to vote on that. So are there any questions, members, on that amendment? All in favor, then, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Wells.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Lundell to describe the bill, and we also have a couple of other testifiers here as well.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lundell, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation. This bill came over from started in transportation, where it was heard. We put together with MAPT, along with the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association, several other organizations, with kind of a catch-all bill on vehicle standards and educational reporting policies, sometimes training policies for students and drivers as well. And this is the version of that bill for this year. We can either go through the entire bill or just those provisions that deal with education.
Mr. Lundell, I think we would prefer just to hear the ones that deal with education, and please tell us there's nothing in here about Type 3 buses.
Madam Chair, there's nothing in here about Type 3 buses, but there is language about Type A1 buses.
Okay, members, pay attention, because this is the sort of bill that we lull to sleep on, and then we hear about it in the interim. Mr. Lundell.
Okay, Madam Chair, Section 1 is an educational provision, and that deals with allowing transportation of pupils for a curricular field trip activity on a bus equipped with a power lift when the power lift is required by a student's disability or Section 504 plan to be reported as special ed transportation. It doesn't get much more arcane than that, does it? Section, the next education section is the reporting section that where Representative Quill has offered and had the amendment accepted. Perhaps I should turn it over to Dave Peterson, the communications director for the Minnesota Association for Pupil Transportation, to talk about the problems we've had with reporting and how we've worked with the department to create a more accurate method of reporting certain student costs.
And this is on page 8, Rep. Mr. Peterson. Welcome.
My name is David Peterson. As Brad mentioned, I'm Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation Communication Officer. We represent school district transportation operations. The cost allocation has to do with allocating transportation costs to different categories of transportation, such as regular, special ed, desegregation. The department about 4 years ago came up with some guidelines that required all districts to allocate costs the same method, either based upon miles, time, or number of routes. For some districts, that's not the most accurate way of reporting costs because if a district contracts for service, they have contract rates, they can more accurately allocate costs to transportation categories. For example, if the district knows from their contract rate how much a particular field trip costs, it's more accurate to use that exact cost rather than allocate costs based on some standard. We did work with Department of Education with this language, and the department brought forth the amendment. And one other thing I wanted to say on that was, slipped my mind, but.
Welcome to the club. Maybe it'll come to you before the hearing is over.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Lundell.
Section 4 and Section 5 are the other two education provisions that are in the bill. And these are currently in the House Education Policy Bill. They deal with care and treatment language and transportation with care and treatment. It was in the governor's recommendations, and it was part of the Education Policy Bill that was passed and vetoed last year. So this is just another place where care and treatment language was placed, and it has been adopted and is currently contained in the House Education Policy Bill.
And so we heard that yesterday, so I doubt we have any questions on that. And there's nothing more. Mr. Peterson, did you think of it?
It came to my mind. The other point I wanted to make is that our cost allocation language is supported by the management organization within their legislative platform.
Okay, very good. Any questions from members? Any testimony for or against in the audience? A final statement, then, from Representative Swales or Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, the remainder of the bill deals with the Type A1 bus, increasing the weight to allowable, and some things about school bus endorsement language that are, like I say, have been covered in the Transportation Committee. As we move forward, whether or not these provisions you want to parcel the transportation ones back to the Transportation Committee or carry them all in your bill is certainly up to you. And we certainly will honor whatever decision is made in that.
Thank you very much. It'll all be in our bill. We learned our lesson. Representative Wales.
Madam Chair and members, I do appreciate your attention to this matter and hope that you will allow it to be included in our bill.
Thank you very much. So Representative Wells renews her motion that House File 1856 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, now we have our working group bill with Representative Brown and Representative Newton. And if they could come to the table and maybe give us a little bit of background on your process and who you worked with. We'll move your bill first and do your amendments, and then if you can give us the background and the process and then tell us about your bill. And there are people who want to testify, and then Representative Garofalo has an amendment as well. But if you could first move your bill and get it in the shape that you would like it in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We would like to first move, I've got an amendment to the bill.
Representative Newton moves House File 2051, and now that we have the bill before us, Representative Newton, if you would move your amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, the amendment is the 809-0349 amendment.
Representative Brown or Newton moves the A090349 amendment. What does this, you want to, is this part of what you'll explain in the
yes,
bill?
Yes, so we'll explain just, it all together.
Very good. So we'll just, any questions on this, we'll have it when they explain the bill.
Yes,
Mr. Garofalo.
Madam Chair, if it's okay, I'd actually like to discuss the amendment first before it's adopted. I just want to make sure I understand it right, Representative Newton. Madam Chair and Representative Newton, it's no secret of my opposition to this categorical funding. And I just want to make sure I understand this right. It looks like on lines 1.4 through 1.10, the things I've objected to, the STEP hip-hop program, the ethnic food festivals, the cultural administrator, cultural liaison officers, that we're actually proposing a property tax increase to pay for this. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, we are looking at more of an equalization program here. This is Minneapolis currently receives $35 extra in levy authority than all the other school districts in the state, and this would make the other districts, including Farmington, the same as Minneapolis.
Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, on line 1.4, it says a school district where the enrollment of protected students exceeds 15% may levy this. So is it your understanding that this would apply to all districts in the state, or just the... just those that are over 15%, Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, it's...
I could be reading it wrong, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure.
It is the 15%.
Okay. And
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, a question for you. I'm looking at the timeline up here, and the stamp on this amendment is from April 2nd, which I think is today. And it's just...
The staff tells me that they did make the deadline with this one, and they had some small edits on this one, so this is a newer version, but I know that they did have it in because we had a meeting about this yesterday, and I thought it was the same amendment, so you pointed out the date.
All right. Madam Chair, I just wanted to make sure. Madam Chair, I'm going to request a roll call on the 349 amendment, and I'd like to speak against it.
Roll call has been requested, and Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned in my questions to Representative Newton and Representative Brown, I have serious objections with how this program is being funded right now. Earlier this year, when I did participate with Representative Newton and Representative Brown in this work group, and stated my opinion that this is a program that needs to be eliminated. And a couple of the examples that are taking place is that in rural school districts, where we have a much lower cost of living, we're seeing cultural liaison officers being paid $125,000. And in suburban school districts, we're seeing an integration program coordinator making $99,000, a secretary for an integration program coordinator of $57,000. And now what this amendment is doing is not only allowing this to go forward, we're actually going to raise property taxes to do this. And so that is my opposition to this bill, to this amendment. And the final point I would make is in Section 4 in the appropriation, it looks like there is a $2 million grant for those school districts that are under 15% of protected students. I'm not one to focus exclusively on funding and no other factor, but just to give everyone an example of how little that is compared to the other districts under 15%. That are losing, it's the Lakeville School District, which I represent, we're losing $1.2 million alone under this bill. So the $2 million nature in this appropriation, if you're a person who is exclusively focused on funding, is wholly inadequate. And for those reasons, I would, and others, I would oppose the 349 amendment and ask members to vote against it.
Before we have the roll call, and I will call on Representative Brown or Newton, but I would just say, Representative Garofalo, it's the customary practice here in this committee that we get the bill courteously in the shape that the author wants it, and then if we don't like the bill, we vote against the bill. And I don't think that putting an amendment in the shape that the author wants it needs to be quite this controversial. Representative Newton or Representative Brown? Representative Brown.
Madam Speaker, I think that, of course, this is the state that we would like the bill to be in. And what it helps us do with this amendment is to continue what our goal was to make integration funding more fair across the board and give district equal opportunity in this matter, and that's how we saw it and presented it.
Thank you very much.
And Madam Chair, I think that once we actually discuss the bill and how we've met the recommendations of the auditor's report, it will all come together.
Thank you, Representative Brown. The clerk will call the roll. We're voting now on the amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes.
Grayling?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Gaffney?
Pass.
Demmer?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Dietrich?
Yes.
Shepke?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Marquardt?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
Morgan?
Yes.
Newton?
Yes.
Slocum?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Tilbury?
Yes.
Ward?
Yes.
Gaffney?
Pass.
There being 12 ayes and 6 nays, the motion passes and the amendment is adopted. Now we are to the bill as amended to get it in the shape that the authors wish, and this has been another one, and I think our final very hard-working working group that's been working all session to respond to the auditor's report, and they're going to give us a background on what they did and who was involved and then tell us about the bill. So who is starting?
Madam Chair, I would like to start mentioning some of the people who helped us with this. We had several committee meetings, and several members of the legislature attended, and others we kept informed through email. But in addition to that, we had the school districts, Minneapolis and St. Paul, their representatives. The three integration districts, Duluth, Superintendent Lester, I just mentioned Dr. Orfield, Mr. Kroonquist, Ms. Amundson, Mr. Jett, Superintendent Lester, Marsha Moore, Representative Garofalo, Ms. Gilbert, Ms. Teresa Graham and Mr. Gordon Brown from MDE. So we tried to make sure that we kept everyone informed of what we were doing as we moved along with the bill, everyone who expressed an interest in it. And every time something new came up or we received more information, we transmitted that by email to all the interested parties. We had individual discussions with the representatives from the various integration districts, the lobbyists for the school districts, and I felt that we made sure we listened to everyone and took their input into consideration. And if I may, I'd like to ask Representative Brown to go over how we've covered the OLA report and address those issues, which was the primary and initial function of our subcommittee.
Thank you, Representative Newton. Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, House File 2051 was developed in response to this legislative auditor's report of 05, and after actually reading the findings of the report, Representative Newton and I both agreed that there certainly was a need to change. In preparation for this work, as Representative Newton said, we did meet with numerous groups. We studied the findings of the previous committee work on the subject, read the report, met with a number of stakeholders, held the open meetings, used the email to keep progress of people in the loop of what we were doing. We certainly also met with the Office of the Legislative Auditor and the Department of Education, so we were truly trying to do the work of that was suggested needed done by the auditor's report. The bill before you addresses the key suggestions to the legislative auditor's report, and I just want to walk you through them, and I can do this rather quickly. But in the list of recommendations, there was a requirement, or a suggestion, I should say, to clarify the purpose, and you're going to find that on page 1.11. we also, the goal also was to establish a criteria that that plans could be evaluated against, and to withhold revenue from districts if they did not comply with if they did not show improvement. And you can find how we dealt with those suggestions on page 2.11, 4.24, and 3.21. We were also suggested to establish some criteria for our expenditures, and you'll find that on page 4.30. Also, we needed to make sure that the Department of Education would fulfill their responsibilities in overseeing this program, and that they needed to evaluate the districts and their plans, and that we addressed in 4.7 through 17. We also wanted to be able to have them review the information and provide some additional guidance and oversight, and that was suggested from the Legislative Auditor's Report as well. And you'll find where we met those requirements, or I should say suggestions, on 4.28 and 4.26 and 7. And then what we wanted to do also is make sure that the Department of Education would identify promising integration practices. That was another suggestion, and that's in 4.24 and 5. We also wanted to make sure that we dealt with voluntary participation and allowing districts to obtain approval through the Minnesota Department of Ed, and that is in 2.9. 3.11 and 2.17 and 18, and then again a little bit in 4.31 and 3.2. And one of the other suggestions was that we really need to get everybody under the same rules, is how I would put it, but it was to make sure that the department was able to have approval ability over Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, and that's in 1.15. So those were the different policy recommendations that that we worked with, and were suggestions of the auditor's report.
And Madam Chair, if I might add, at the hearing on the K-12 policy bill, that the OLA, the legislator auditor, came forward and indicated that we had met the requirements of their report. Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to walk through the bill and explain what we are doing and how this is different from the current system. In this bill, we're linking continuation of desegregation funding to closing the achievement gap. Currently, there are no requirements as to how the funding is supposed to be used. And so we want to have a measurement of how the achievement gap is going to be closed as we go forward this. And in saying that, Representative Breinert at the policy committee hearing indicated that this would be something that would be a very difficult thing to measure, as to specifically how you link funding to doing something like closing the achievement gap. So in the amendment, we are providing that the Department of Education work with the appropriate assessment groups to come up with a formula that would be able to measure this. Also, as Representative Brown stated, we are including everyone under the same policy, so that Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth are under the same policy as the other school districts. And this will require those three districts to file a plan with the Department of Education. Currently, other districts have to file a plan, but the three cities of the first class have not had to date, and they have all agreed that they would do that. Additionally, what we have is, instead of having funding go to the district based on the total population of the district, the funding will go to the district based on the number of protected students in the district, so that the money will follow the students and not go to the district. We have established, as Representative Garofalo said, a 15% minimum cutoff for school districts. with the assumption being that if you have 15% or fewer students of a protected category within the district, they're already integrated. We should be concentrating on those districts with higher concentrations of protected students. As I mentioned earlier in response to Representative Garofalo's question about the $35 additional funding, we feel that if Minneapolis is entitled to this amount, that all school districts should be entitled to the same levy authority. Also, we've asked in here that the Department of Education does not link anything in this plan or in this legislation to the No Child Left Behind law. And with that, I think perhaps maybe we should open this up for questions, or unless Representative Brown.
Representative Brown. I think one thing I would like to stress also is that within this bill also, we did add a little bit of language that talked about a sustained increased interracial contact, and that combination under that under the definition portion on the first page, when we talk about that what we're doing is actually trying to close the achievement gap and add sustained increased interracial contact. Those two items together in that definition, I think, would prevent a lot of the types of activities that Representative Garofalo is concerned about, mm-hmm. because we were concerned about that as well.
Questions from members? Representative Beatrix.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newton, Representative Brown, I'm not totally up to speed on your bill, as I should be, and so I apologize for that. I understand right now the goal of integration aid. I understand how it's previously funded, and one of the issues that I have had with integration aid since the very beginning is that it is partially funded on property taxes. And I consider that a highly funding increase. Any of those negatives, I'll take them. And I would say that the average taxpayer does not understand that their property taxes have risen and what they are paying for. And that really goes against the philosophy of what we have had in public education in the past. So what does your bill do to the school district, the property tax piece of the bill? I understand what the state aid does in districts, whether it rises or lowers. But what does your bill do to the property tax component?
Representative Newton, and you might want to also explain for the committee our plans for what we're intending to work on this year, or enact this year, versus what will continue on.
Yes.
Representative Newton.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dietrich. The basic plan doesn't change. Currently, 70% of the funding for integration aid integration funding is from integration aid, which is state funding. The other 30% comes from the levy. The difference, as brought out by Representative Garofalo, is that there would be an additional $35 per pupil levy authorized under this. But as Representative Dreiling is saying, we are trying to get in this bill the policy framework out. The funding portion of it isn't going to take place. We want to get this into the Minnesota Miracle. The funding formula is the earliest won't happen until the next biennium and possibly the biennium after that. That gives us time to work on this. And questions such as the cap that the governor has set on the integration formula and how we'll work with that isn't addressed in here, and we assume that we will stay within the governor's cap. So, as I say, what we're trying to do is get a framework for the policy, get the policy into legislation, and then we'll work with it. And Representative Brown and I have committed to working with all of the groups that are interested, the various communities that will be affected, and spend time this summer and in next session in getting everything laid out so that future amendments will be coming forward on the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Newton.
And any members of this committee who are interested, who haven't been part of it or who have been, can work with them as well. I would highly urge that Representative Garofalo he's so dissatisfied with what we have at the moment, roll up his sleeves and help them out and get involved and not just pounce after the bread is baked. Rev. Dempsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At the policy meeting, I had made a couple of comments about it. Obviously, I am not happy with my district losing $1 million between Minnetonka and Wayzata in this in the current, you know, in your bill. However, I did make a statement that I believe the Senate is not acting on this bill this year. You might have updated information for me. They have. Proposed at this moment to put together a study and to be enacted once the study is finished. Now, maybe you have more updated information for me. Could you tell us where the Senate is at on this particular bill?
Madam Chair and Representative Jeffy, my understanding is that the Senate has had just one hearing on the bill, and I don't know where it's gone from that. I think it was a general sort of an open session meeting, and Senator Vonhoff has gathered information, but I don't know if she's moved anything forward.
And we try not to talk about the Senate here, but their bill is out, and so anybody that's interested can check them out. Rep. Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just a couple of preliminary questions and following up somewhat on Representative Dietrich's property tax concerns. Trying to understand, I'm still working out over the amendment. The language, specifically the language on 1.4 to 1.10, this would affect the Choice is Yours program that Minneapolis students are involved in, taking students from Minneapolis and out to the suburbs. The transportation dimension of that is paid for by a federal grant, and you would have us decline the federal grant and instead have property taxpayers pay for that, and I'm just wondering what your rationale for that is.
Madam Chair and Representative, that 1.4, 1.10 really has nothing to do with the Choice is Yours program. What that does is just gives levy authority to the district.
Representative Dabney.
Would the chair prefer that I responded to Representative Newton, listened to Mr. Morgan, or moved on to my next question?
I would like to hear from Mr. Morgan if he's addressing your question.
Then so would I.
Okay. I assume you're coming here about that question. Okay. And then we'll go back to Rep. Dabney. I think he's not done. Mr. Morgan, welcome.
I'm Morgan Brown with the Education Department.
I mean, Mr. Brown.
My apologies as well.
I followed right after
If we can get you to do that on some other things, we got a good deal going.
Representative Mariani does the same thing in his committee, so I'm used to it by now. To clarify one thing and then address something else in the amendment. The transportation for students in Minneapolis that participate in the Choice is Yours suburban option actually is not funded by the federal grant we receive. It's funded by a separate appropriation from integration revenue called Interdistrict Integration Transportation Aid, and that is available for interdistrict activities that are included in an integration plan. And so it's that funds the transportation under Choice is Yours. I do, and this just maybe is the start of discussion, again, well, I appreciate how collaborative the authors have been. The amendment, as I understand it, does repeal that appropriation, the interdistrict transportation aid, with the assumption that it would be paid for by other existing integration revenue. And I'll obviously want to give the office a chance to talk about that. We would have a concern about that if that would interfere in any way or make districts less likely to participate in the Choice is Yours program and also other kinds of interdistrict programs where students are actually moving enrollment to attend interdistrict magnet schools and that type of thing.
Very good. And I will go back to Rep. Dabney for his final question, and then I want to have us focus, because we have a couple people signed up to testify. We want to get to Rep. Grockwell's amendment. Have us focus on the policy as much as possible, even though this is the Finance Committee, because we're not going to do anything with the finance this year. And so we can continue to work, and, you know, maybe we all don't like another property tax when there could be state funding. That's kind of the gist of the new Minnesota miracle. I'm sure the authors they've been very open to many suggestions and actually wish they had had more people helping them and more people offering concrete suggestions. Just the last hour, Representative Brown and Representative Newton and I, and I was Representative Mariani there, maybe not, we were meeting with a former Representative Myron Orfield and others that he brought in from Isaiah and other groups, and they had yet another funding plan that we were very intrigued with, which may supplant this one in the end. Mary Ciccone was there because it was a group of parents, and so I think that we're most interested this year in making sure we get the policy right. But I think your questions and your worry about the choice is yours, because what we don't most want to do this year, and we won't because we're not enacting anything financial, but we certainly don't want to we don't want any losers this year when we're in tough financial straits. That's why all funding things are being phased in when the economy improves. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then, from what I understand from Mr. Brown, it would be replacing the state aid with the local property tax to fund the transportation, which strikes me as a disincentive then for districts to participate in inter-district collaboratives if now the transportation costs are borne by the resident district of the student who's going someplace else.
Yeah.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, no, that's not the intent. What we're looking at here is the possibility of using the integration aid that the district receives to pay for the portion of the transportation. If a student is being moved to another district to be educated, that the transportation aid that they're currently receiving would go with the student, and that would pay for the transportation, and it would also go with the regular funding for the student. So it has nothing to do with the choices you're assembling. Although that amount of money, I think it's $32 million per biennium, for the next biennium, is there that we could possibly use that. And I know that the chair doesn't want us to get into this, but that could be used rather than having to go to property taxes.
I think we'll go now to the two people who signed up.
I haven't gotten to my second question.
I didn't know you had a second question.
I did, and you acknowledged it. Oh. Well, I'll leave the first topic with a comment that I may be understanding what your intent is. That's not what the language says.
Okay. And
secondly,
another second.
No. That was. You'll notice that.
Third second.
No. You'll notice that was a statement, not a question.
Oh, Representative
Dabney. Declaratory sentence.
Your last second.
All right. All right.
Another way to have one is.
No. I'll stop here. Under the language again on 1-4 to 1-10.
Yes.
You would now require districts with greater than 15% protected class children to pay the transportation costs of students involved in open enrollment. A responsibility that they do not currently have. And I'm wondering what's the rationale if my children of protected class and we decide to send them to St. Paul, why now the Minneapolis property taxpayers would be responsible for the transportation, while under current law it is me as a family that is responsible for the transportation of open enrollment students.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, that's not the intent. The levy portion, the 30%, would stay with the District of Minneapolis. It would come out of the integration aid that you're receiving from the state that would pay for the transportation. And the balance of the aid that's not used for transportation would go to with the students to the other district.
We'll now have Teresa Graham and Superintendent Dan Jett, if they could both come forward. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify today? Mr. Graswall and Mr. Kroonquist. Okay. So each of you, if you could try to take 2+ minutes, I think that's about all we have time for if we're going to get to Representative Garofalo's amendment. And as I said, this bill is being laid over. Ms. Graham, if you could identify yourself, 2 to 2.5 minutes.
My name is Teresa Graham. I'm a licensed independent clinical social worker and a school social worker, too, with over 30 years of experience in my profession, including 16 years working in Minnesota schools. I am not a paid lobbyist, but I've done quite a bit of research in this area, which I've shared with members of the committee. I emailed you my reports. I hope you've had a chance to look at them. And I would like to suggest that some of Representative Garofalo's comments are well taken in terms of where this money has been going in the past, and that we need to move on from there and really change the system. It's not a pretty picture, and if you look at the summary of all of the research that I did in December and January of this year, I looked at every single school district file and where the money is currently going. And yes, there's a lot of dancing going on, Representative Garofalo. But I think that on a more serious note, the bill that was introduced, 2051, is an excellent attempt to address the issues from the legislative auditor's report. The one thing I want to say to you today is it's very discouraging for citizens when this goes on for years and years, and there's been so much discussion and there have been so many meetings in the last 2 years on this issue. And to drop the ball again is really unfair to the children of this state. So I just encourage you to have the courage to move forward with this and not say next year, always next year. The kids can't wait much longer, and it has been studied to death, and I can talk to you about what's happening in the Senate because I've been over there, and they do have a subcommittee that
now,
has...
No, we don't want to hear about the Senate. We do know about it. I just don't want to take up our time with the Senate.
I just want they know about the issue, and I think that you need to take the leadership on this at this point and move this forward. Anybody who has questions about my report can certainly feel free to contact me. But I think it speaks for itself. And thank you very much to Representative Newton and Brown for the excellent work that they did on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Graham. Superintendent Jett.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Daniel Jett, and I'm superintendent of the West Metro Education Program, also known as WEMEP. Today I'm speaking on behalf of our 11-member district of WEMEP, for the 11-member districts of the East Metro Integration District, EMID, and for the 7 members of the Northwest Suburban Integration District. Those 29 combined member districts in our organizations enroll over 250,000 students, are taught by thousands of teachers in hundreds of schools in the region. Although our testimony today will be brief, we want to emphasize our belief in the importance of this work to our communities and to every student and every family in them. We further believe that there is an urgent and compelling need for all of us to work hard and persistently to ensure an equitable education for all students in Minnesota, white and non-white students, all. Our students deserve no less, our communities benefit greatly in many ways, and our businesses will again flourish when that end is achieved. First, we appreciate the fact that school integration has risen to the level as to receive the important and serious consideration that this committee and others in the Minnesota legislature are giving it. Second, we appreciate the specific work of the authors of this bill and acknowledge their kind invitation for our participation in their deliberation. As to the topic of the bill, integration revenue. First, we think the timing of the bill is putting the cart before the horse in that we think the current desegregation rule needs further clarification and definition and with clear expectations and outcomes identified. Then we believe that a funding mechanism and evaluation system should be developed to achieve the desired outcomes, but only after the desegregation rule itself and its desired outcomes and expectations are in place. We believe that both of these activities should be accomplished in the off-session time period between the conclusion of the current legislative session and the beginning of the 2010 session. We believe that a significant part of the deliberations in this regard over the coming months should be about the fact that the state of Minnesota does in fact have a very specific and compelling public interest in assuring that its public schools are equitable and successful for all students. And to that end, we believe that public schools perform at their best for all students when they are intentionally and effectively fully integrated. We believe that integration revenue can and should provide the means through which that important end can be attained, meaning the creation and support of public schools that are equitable and successful for all students. Our organizations and our member districts stand ready and eager to participate in any further dialogue and decision-making relative to the Minnesota desegregation rule, to the definitions of integration and segregation as they pertain to Minnesota's public schools, and to the purposes, amounts, and means of distributing integration revenue in further years. We further stand ready to provide significant regional support and assistance to the Minnesota Department of Education on behalf of the state's public school integration efforts. As for this specific bill, House File 2051, among others, we have the following concerns. First is the de facto manner in which segregation and integration are defined by the provisions of the bill. What I mean is the rationale for the identification as segregated any schools with 15% or more minority student population is confusing, since schools that are 100% white or 100% non-white are not considered segregated. Second, the punitive nature of the funding and the arbitrariness of the trigger for such financial punishment reminds us of No Child Left Behind. The reduction of integration revenue by 50% if goals are not met is it all or nothing. Third, the bill does not establish, in our opinion, a bona fide state interest in the schools being equitable and fully integrated, and it does not recognize that all students benefit from integrated schools, since the bill focuses primarily on students of color. We have other concerns about this bill. However, for today, our message is that we believe it would be best for the legislature to work in the off-session time to bring more voices into the discussion about the importance to the state of Minnesota of providing all students with equitable and successful schools. Thank you for this opportunity to share these thoughts with you today, and we'll be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you very much, and it sounds like a lot of your concerns, if not all of them, are the ones we're doing in the interim, so it's well-timed that is exactly what the authors plan, and I hope you'll continue working with them. And it was a group of your parents from WEMAP that we met with, and they were very eloquent, and you may know about their proposal.
I do.
And I think the authors were very interested in it, so I hope you'll keep helping us out. Thank you. Mr. Kroonquist and Mr. Grasswall. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. AMSD really, I think, represents kind of the microcosm of all the different district scenarios that play out here. I would have member districts, Madam Chair, members that would be very supportive of House Bill 2051, some that would probably be neutral, and some that would probably oppose it. And, Madam Chair, I support my member districts.
well said.
But to try to be a little serious, I think it clearly is an issue that's begging for interim study. And sometimes we try to shove those kind of issues up that we really don't want to deal with, or say we'll deal with it later. We would certainly hope that's not the case. That in fact you would consider establishing a task force that really is going to dive into this and consider the excellent work that Representative Brown and Representative Newton have started here. The landscape has changed so dramatically in Minnesota just over the last 10 years. I think many of you probably saw the article that was in the Star Tribune just recently about the phenomenal growth in Scott County and students of color and minority populations. Today, really, the districts that you heard from earlier, Brooklyn Center, Richfield, Columbia Heights, they look more like Minneapolis than Minneapolis. I mean, it's just incredible the change that has occurred. So we think we need to go back, redo the DFEG rule, really do some homework, do what we can, as you've indicated, with the work that Representatives Brown and Newton have begun this session, but then let's commit to making progress in the long term on a more comprehensive overhaul. Thank you
very much, Mr. Grasswall.
Mr. Kroonquist, there. Mr. Grasswall here.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we get confused a lot.
I know it.
Madam Chair, Member Jim Grasswall, representing Minneapolis Public Schools. I'd like to thank the authors for bringing the bill forward, and to be really concise, the amending use of revenue to include closing the achievement gap, great. The budget approval process, putting the first class city schools under the department's budget approval, they're approving our plans. We're accepting the approval of budget. We think some criteria would be helpful there. We think the authors are amenable to that and have some criteria language. On the amendment, I do think it is problematic in that paragraph B, and I think we wind up getting, in Minneapolis, we're doing Choice is Yours, open enrollment, and the West Metro Education Program. And I just want to note, this is all movement to students of color in general out of the city. And I think let's focus in the interim on how do you bring students back into the city, or how do you integrate in a two-way fashion. I think Myron Orfield's proposal does stress that proposal, and I appreciate that concept or focusing on that in the interim. But I think the language in the first, in line 1.4, 1.10, do wind up creating an obligation for open enrollment transportation out of the that $35 levy. We don't have any issues with extending a $35 levy to anyone else. There's an interesting...
Mr. Grasswall, we've got 5 more minutes, so if you could focus on more general, because we're not going to do the finance, and it's likely to be displaced by Mr. Orfield's suggestion.
Madam Chair, thank you. So finally, just going to
funding integration on a protected student class basis may be problematic for us. When we do that movement out of the district, for Minneapolis, we have to integrate not just internally at a 70-30%. We have to collaborate with our partners and have honest conversations about that. But the if the funding moves out, then there's a disincentive to do that kind of collaboration that we need to do to integrate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gilbert. We're down to 4 minutes. We have an amendment, and we have to we have a question for Mr. Brown.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert, and I'll keep mine to one. But first, I just want to wish Jim Draffel 50th happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday!
And I promise I won't sing.
All right.
We share some of the same concerns. We do just, from a policy standpoint, having the distribution based solely on protected class continues to be a problem. While we support the ability for a district to use the funds for closing the achievement gap, it appears that the evaluation seems to be heavily weighted on that, and so it might be problematic for a district like ours who wants to continue to do their choice program, which would have a lot of components related to getting kids to their magnet programs and supporting the magnet or thematic programs that are available in the district. Those are our two biggest concerns at this point, and we do feel that the existing programs that have been working for years should be grandfathered in.
Thank you very much. Mr. Brown, we have a question for you. In case we should do, and we do know, even though we don't like to mention the Senate, that they did do the capping and freezing, should we do that, or should we be discussing that with them in conference committee? Could you tell us what exactly that would do? What outcome would that have for districts?
Madam Chair, the Governor's, Morgan Brown with the Education Department, the Governor's proposal would be essentially to freeze integration revenue at the fiscal year 09 level for the, fiscal year 09 for the current year, which means that essentially any districts that are currently receiving integration aid or integration aid could not receive any more than they received in this year once this year's all said and done, because this is a reimbursement-based program, and that any new districts that come into having an impact, where the DSEG rule has an impact on them, could not receive any integration revenue if they did not receive integration revenue in FY09. So it's essentially kind of freezing the program in place.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Representative Garofalo, you've already given us your speech, so now if you could move your amendment and tell us what it does. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did want to make one correction. Earlier you talked about me being a puma and pouncing on my friends, Representative Brown and Representative Newton. I do want to let you know that I did attend a workgroup session with both the members, and in addition, Representative Brown has the misfortune of sitting right behind me on the House floor, so she hears me complain about this during every floor session.
So, Representative Graff, I stand corrected. You've been working on this all along.
And, Madam Chair, just very briefly, the amendment that I drafted is a delete-all amendment, and with the inclusion of the additional amendment, I don't feel comfortable offering a delete-all, nor scurrying around here with the staff to try to change it, but I did want to just make a couple of comments, and that is that if we had 100 kids lined up in this room right here and we said we wanted to steer additional resources to the kids who are behind and need help, if just sitting here anecdotally talking about it, would we say, well, let's find the kids who are minority and make sure that they get more resources? Well, of course we wouldn't do that. Would we say, well, let's just find the kids who are from poor families and let's give them extra money? Well, no, of course we wouldn't do that either. What we would do is we would say, who needs help? Who is behind? And frankly, the thing that's most insulting about the integration categorical is it assumes that every minority child is having problems. And it really bothers me, because there's a lot of minority kids out there who are kicking the pants off of white kids. And so tying it to race, tying it to purely income classifications, I have a big objection with. We should be tying these things to who are the kids that are really behind, and then targeting the assistance that's necessary there. So, Madam Chair, I'm not going to offer the amendment today, but I suspect that as the K-12 omnibus bill moves forward, we'll be having additional discussions, and I appreciate you allowing the discussion.
Thank you very much. And a final statement from the authors. Representative Brown.
Madam Chair, I wasn't going to do a final statement. I might blow this up real quick, but you can stop me. I just wanted to thank Representative Dabney for making his point about our amendment that we had. And as I read it, one more time, had we caught this before we walked in the door, I just wanted to point out that in line 1.9, where it says this levy, we wouldn't have had that. We would have asked for that the funds be guaranteed by integration revenue instead. And if anybody is okay with that, can we offer oral author's amendment? This would really get it into the shape that we would prefer to have it voted on today.
Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, can you do that for us just quickly, or should we wait till we mark up the bill? While they're thinking about that, do you want to continue on with your closing statement, either you or Rep. Sam Newton?
Yep. Just wanted to thank the committee for your questions and the stakeholders for the feedback on our bill. I want to thank the chair as well. You know, it's been 4 years since the legislative auditor had made the recommendations for integration revenue formula, and it's our intent to put the bill, with this bill, to put districts under the same guidelines and make the system more accountable. We really are planning on doing some working groups over the summer and meet a number of the districts. We're willing to continue the work that we've been doing and continue to ask and take feedback on the bill as it moves through the process. We'd appreciate your support.
Very good. Before we go to Rep. Newton, Mr. Crow is saying that we could do an oral amendment on line 1.9, strike by this levy and insert under this section. So it would be all the revenue generated in this section. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. That amendment is adopted. And a final statement from Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And very briefly, I just want to thank everyone who was involved in this process. And it has been, I was hoping when I came here I'd have something with some meat on it, and I have a lot of meat. And I just hope we haven't made stew out of it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Brown and Newton and members. And we all do have a lot of work to do on this, but I think there's an amazing amount of work that's been done. And over the interim, I'm quite confident that next year, even Ms. Graham will be satisfied with what we passed. The meeting is adjourned.